Obviously, today is a time to remember Justice Scalia's legacy. I plan to fulfill my constitutional responsibilities to nominate a successor in due time. There will be plenty of time for me to do so and for the Senate to fulfill its responsibility to give that person a fair hearing and a timely vote. These are responsibilities that I take seriously, as should everyone. They're bigger than any one party. They are about our democracy. They're about the institution to which Justice Scalia dedicated his professional life and making sure it continues to function as the beacon of justice that our founders envisioned.
When George W. Bush was president, it was very rare that I ever heard the word Constitution uttered. And then we decided to nominate a black man for the Democratic Party to run for president. And then all of a sudden, I started hearing the word Constitution a lot more. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 153. Very happy to be here with you. So, the Constitution. All of a sudden, everything that we want is unconstitutional. There is one conservative talk show host that I listen to over on Sirius XM, and every single thing to him, is it in the Constitution? It's not in the Constitution, then you can't have it. Guns are in the Constitution, so you can have guns. It doesn't matter what it is. Now, wait a minute. If we're going to be that stringent about the Constitution, if we're going to be that draconian about the Constitution, there's an awful lot of things that the Constitution says that we cannot do. And if you're talking about the document and its original intent, now remember, it's several hundred years later. There's things that exist right now that did not exist way back then. Such as, if you're talking about guns, one of the things that exists now that did not exist then are these guns that can street sweepers, the guns that can cut down trees. That didn't exist back then. And I'm fairly certain, with respect to the Second Amendment argument, which, by the way, I'm fairly certain, if you've ever listened to any conservative talk, is the only amendment. Right now, Donald Trump is talking about changing our libel laws. We'll get into that in another show. But that's covered by the First Amendment. And by the way, this is their front runner. They're about to make this guy their nominee, so there's not a lot of concern about that. But the Constitution, if there's things that you Democrats want, Constitution, if it's not in the Constitution, you don't get it. So they stick to the Constitution. Then Scalia died. Of all of the Supreme Court justices that could pass while Obama was president, I don't think there's one that conservatives love more than Scalia. And the response was immediate. The body, not even cold yet, and I know that's kind of crass to say, but not even cold yet, and the conservatives, like Mitch McConnell, were up in arms saying, don't even bother sending anybody to us because we ain't gonna hear from him.
Less than an hour after the news of Justice Scalia's death became public, the majority leader announced that the Senate would not take up the business of considering a replacement until after the presidential elections. Quote, the American people should have a voice in the selection of their next Supreme Court justice, he said. The only problem with the majority leader's reasoning, Mr. President, is that the American people have spoken twice. President Barack Obama was elected and then reelected by a solid majority of the American people who correctly understood that elections have consequences, not the least of which is that when a vacancy occurs, the President of the United States has the constitutional responsibility to appoint a justice to the Supreme Court.
I love how the Republican Party, who, by the way, only do what their donors say. We talked about on last week's show a report that came out a few years ago that said that if average working people want legislation, it's very, very unlikely that it's going to pass. But if their rich donors, if the captains of industry want something passed, they grease the palms and they make that thing happen. But I love how when it comes to this, all of a sudden the conservatives are just so concerned about what the people want. Well, we voted for Obama over Romney. We also voted for Obama to be president over John McCain. So clearly the people have spoken. Oh, but nobody turned out for the 2012 election. Voting was actually down in 2012, so it wasn't really the voice of the people. Uh-huh. Well, if that's your measurement, then voting was also down in 2010 and 2014. Would you like to give us the House of Representatives and the Senate, please? No. No, we're not adhering to those rules. It's wild to me. They say they just care about what people want, and now they're looking for every and any excuse not to hear out anybody that this president wants to put on the Supreme Court. And the excuses are just running wild.
Attention, patriots and lovers of liberty. The Constitution is under attack. Unless we all stand fast, this will be the first time in the history of the planet a left-handed black president has nominated someone to the U.S. Supreme Court in an election year that ends with the numeral 6. Barack Hussein Obama is set to violate Earth's 4.5 billion year tradition of deferring all Supreme Court nominations following the death of any conservative Italian-American jurist. The president must do nothing. It's what Scalia would want. Sure, the U.S. Constitution says otherwise, but conservative doctrine dating back to the Magna Carta and early man's right of the wooden club all explicitly imply Obama should do nothing and leave it to the next president.
Offer not valid in the event of a President Sanders or Clinton.
And now that the obligatory 30-second period of mourning has passed, let all patriots and lovers of liberty stand together and tell President Barack Hussein Obama to stand down. If he dares do his constitutional duty of nominating a justice, Obama would enrage patriots everywhere.
My Twitter feed caught fire. My Facebook feed caught fire. And it was pretty amazing. And the right-wing blogosphere, Twittersphere, Facebookosphere, or whatever the hell they call it, that also very much caught fire. And folks, nutty folks on the right, who believe that people actually give a damn what they think. And so the first thing they say is, we aren't going to hear from anybody that he brings up to the Supreme Court. And then the next thing that we hear is, oh, President Obama killed Scalia.
My friends, it's Saturday night. This is an emergency transmission. Associate Supreme Court Justice Anthony Scalia died earlier today at a ranch outside Big Bend in South Texas. I shot a Facebook mentions just earlier today, right after he died, not knowing that he just died, pointing out the fact that we've talked to Matt Drudge and others who talked to Supreme Court justices about the fact that in 2016 they planned to kill the Bill of Rights and Constitution. The question is, was Anthony Scalia murdered? And the answer to that is, has the Bill of Rights and Constitution been murdered? Has it been reported that members of the Supreme Court have been blackmailed? Yes, it has. Does the president order the borders open outside of federal law? Yes. Does he order coal power plants shut down outside of law? Yes. Does he fund ISIS outside of law? Yes.
I don't know how many listeners Alex Jones has, but I know two things. First of all, it's too damn many. Adults. To think that adults are listening to his show. Thinking adults. The other thing I know is he has a hell of a lot more listeners than this show does. And this show is relatively sane. So, but it didn't stop with Mr. Jones. And I understand that he can seem like a bit of a fringe guy on the fringes, right? A nutcase. Well, there's a gentleman, and I use the term loosely, out of San Francisco, named Michael Wiener. Sorry, Savage, Michael, Savage. I guess Savage sounds better than Wiener. Hey, we're going to let you have your name changed, sir. And Michael Savage brought on a presidential candidate and mentioned it to him. He brought Donald Trump on his show. Now, I don't think a lot of people realize this, but Donald Trump has been going on Savage's show for a long time. So Savage is not just some outside the beltway. I mean, this guy is in there. The GOP frontrunner for the nomination right now goes on Michael Savage's show all the time. And then Savage went ahead and put forth this conspiracy that has no basis.
Donald, I need to come back to the topic we've been all screaming about here, which is Scalia. Was he murdered? I know it's pretty brutal to say that. And I'm not wanting to drag you into this, but this is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. I went on the air and said we need the equivalent of a Warren Commission. We need an immediate autopsy before the body is disposed of. What do you think of that?
Well, I just heard today, and just a little while ago, actually. You know, I just landed, and I'm hearing it's a big topic, the question. And it's a horrible topic, but they say they found a pillow on his face, which is a pretty unusual place to find a pillow. I can't tell you what, I can't give you an answer. You know, usually I like to give you answers, but I literally just heard it a little while ago. It's just starting to come out now, as you know, Mike.
There was no medical examiner present. There was no one who declared the death. It was there. It was done by telephone from a U.S. Marshal appointed by Obama himself.
So the way they talked about this man in life and the way they talked about this man in death, you can be forgiven for thinking that a Messiah died. You can be forgiven for thinking that Jesus Christ himself just was murdered by this black left-handed president in a year that ends in six. You can be forgiven for thinking all of that, for thinking how great and wonderful Scalia was, but Scalia was not great. And it's not merely the fact that Scalia and I don't agree. Scalia was not great. I cannot say what he was like personally. I never got to sit in front of him and ask him questions. I imagine he might have hauled off and hit me or something. But Scalia was not a great man. And the way we know this is via his opinions. Now, real quick, before I get to some of those opinions that made him a darling to the right, let me say a couple of things. They're surprised that a 79-year-old man who ate a horrible diet, and we know that, who was dealing with obesity and hypertension and diabetes, died all of a sudden. Now, it's not as though he was fit. You look at somebody like RBG, she's working out every morning. When she drops, that's going to be a bit of a surprise, but then maybe not so much because she's up there in years too. Scalia, before he passed, he had a shoulder injury, and his doctor mentioned to him that he would need surgery to correct the shoulder, but decided not to do the surgery because of Scalia's advanced age. He said, "Your ticker, you might not survive the surgery, so therefore we're not going to do the surgery." So we're not talking about the healthiest person right now. So right away, I shouldn't even have to say it, kill the conspiracy theories. What we've also learned about Scalia since his death is this trip that he was on, this hunting trip that he was on in Texas. This, he didn't pay for that. This was a trip paid for by somebody that had business in front of the Supreme Court. Yeah. So Scalia, a little bit dirty, and his opinions, a little bit gross. So this from Jezebel, they decided to highlight just some of, and I'll give you quotes here, some of his more conservative opinions on abortion rights. Now, from his dissenting opinion in the Planned Parenthood v. Casey case, where he argued that the state could make abortion illegal for the same reasons that it would outlaw bigamy. Quote, "The issue is whether abortion is a liberty protected by the Constitution of the United States." Oh, there it is. Sorry. "I'm sure that it is not." This is his opinion. "I reached that conclusion not because of anything so exalted as my views concerning the concept of existence, of meaning, of the universe, and of the mystery of human life. Rather, I reach it for the same reason I reached the conclusion that bigamy is not a constitutionally protected because of these two simple facts. One, the Constitution says nothing about it. There it is. And two, the longstanding traditions of American society have been permitted it to be legally proscribed. On women cussing, he really did not care for ladies using the swears. One of the things that upsets me about modern society," quoting here, "is the coarseness of manners." This from a racist. By the way, I'll get to that soon. "You can't go to a movie or watch a television show for that matter. Get off my lawn." Sorry. "Without hearing the constant use of the F word, including by, you know, the ladies. On homosexuality and LGBT rights." Scalia's dissent in the Lawrence v. Texas, which struck down anti-sodomy laws, Scalia argued, more or less, that the state could make laws against homosexuality for the same reasons it would have an interest in outlawing murder or bestiality. Yes, homosexuality, murder, bestiality. Quote, The Texas statute undeniably seeks to further the belief of its citizens that certain forms of sexual behavior are immoral and unacceptable. The same interest furthered by criminal laws against fornication, bigamy, adultery, adult incest, bestiality, and obscenity, because yes, absolutely all the same. We're not talking about bestiality or bigamy, we're talking about two people in love. And finally, from the same interview where he wept about swearing ladies coarsening the manners of modern society, he also had something to say about the gays. Quote, I have friends that I know or very much suspect are homosexual. Yes, and they probably do not want to tell you because you're Scalia. Capital punishment. He was enthusiastically for it. This from a Pew Forum. You want to have a fair death penalty. You kill, you die. That's fair. A man of God, right? Torture. He was also for this. And this has come back into our political discussions too. Scalia only held that torture was unconstitutional if imposed as a punishment, since that would be cruel and unusual. But for the purposes of getting information, let's go. Quote, we have never held that that's contrary to the Constitution. And I don't know what provision of the Constitution that would contravene. Listen, I think it is very facile for people to say, oh, torture is terrible. You posit the situation where a person you know for sure knows the location of a nuclear bomb that has been planted in Los Angeles that will kill millions of people. You think it's an easy question. You think it's clear that you cannot use extreme measures to get that information out of that person. I don't think that's so clear at all. And once again, it's this sort of self-righteousness of European liberals who answer that question so readily and so easily. It's not that easy a question. And now that we've had a terror attack in Brussels recently, I can't turn on a single right-wing talk show. Now, by the way, I don't listen to every single one of them. There are hundreds of them. But the ones I do listen to, and that includes Sean Hannity, they are barking about how great torture is. And they say, oh, you don't like torture. You don't like torture? What if it was your kid? What if it was my kid? Then I'm pretty sure I have to smooge the person, right? I'm pretty sure some sweet talk would get me a hell of a lot further than waterboarding them. Because what we know about torture is it doesn't get you good, actionable intelligence. Instead, it gets them to say whatever it takes to get you to stop torturing them. Recently, Scalia suggested that black students would do better at schools that weren't too fast for them. So, Melvin, you can't say that Scalia was a racist. Oh, yes, I can. See, what we know about race is it really just has to do with skin color. It has nothing to do with your intelligence or any of these other things that we make up. It's simply your skin color. Your ability is based on a whole lot of other things. It's based on your support group, it's based about your upbringing, the resources that are available to you, things of that nature, right? Nurturing. It's not your skin color. But it was Scalia's opinion that blacks would do better at schools, because he didn't like affirmative action, if they would just slow down for them. And he also was not a fan of the Voting Rights Act.
This last enactment, not a single vote in the Senate against it. And the House is pretty much the same. Now, I don't think that's attributable to the fact that it is so much clearer now that we need this. I think it is attributable, very likely attributable, to a phenomenon that is called perpetuation of racial entitlement. It's been written about whenever a society adopts racial entitlements, it is very difficult to get out of them through the normal political processes.
We didn't adopt racial entitlements. What we did was correct a racial wrong. There was a time in this country where we did not go a single day where we did not lynch black people very openly and in the public. And even you can find pictures of this, photographs, which means things that happened after cameras were invented, where people took smiling pictures, right? I guess it's that era's version of the selfie. They would take smiling pictures of themselves next to some poor black guy that had just been lynched. And this was a thing. And racism is still very present in society. And we enacted the Voting Rights Act because the southern states especially were finding ways to keep African Americans away from the polls. And then, Scalia put it to 60 Minutes this way in 2008. I'm a Law and Order guy. I mean, I confess, I'm a social conservative, but it does not affect my view on cases.
The University of Texas at Austin says to achieve a level of campus diversity that improves learning, race must be a factor in admissions. But could it be, Justice Antonin Scalia asked, that affirmative action harms some students?
There are those who contend that it does not benefit African Americans to get them into the University of Texas where they do not do well, as opposed to having them go to a less advanced school, a slower track school, where they do well.
He said some studies show that most black scientists do not come from elite universities.
They come from lesser schools where they do not feel that they're being pushed ahead in classes that are too fast for them.
That produced a few gasps in the courtroom.
The great thing about those tapes, and I've heard more than a few of these tapes when Supreme Court justices would speak, and the gasps are generally inaudible no matter how loud they are. But in a few of them, after Scalia spoke, the gasps would get loud enough to where the mic would pick them up just a little bit. And that means that that gasp had to come from out in the courtroom and make its way up to the front of the courtroom to where you could hear it. And I gasped right now. I tell you what, they didn't hear that upstairs. I'm in the downstairs of the house. Yes, you got pictures of me in my basement. That's fine. I don't care. Hey, it's beautiful down here. I've got a window. It's a very nice studio. Anyway, so Scalia was a conservative and also, as a bonus, a hardcore racist. I can't say how he was in his everyday life. Maybe he had friends that were black or that he strongly suspected were black. And the conservatives, the Republicans in America, would very, very much like another conservative justice, i.e. racist, please.
Justice Kennedy, when he was nominated by Ronald Reagan, in Ronald Reagan's last year in office, a vote was taken, and there were a whole lot of Democrats who I'm sure did not agree with Justice Kennedy on his position on a variety of issues. But they did the right thing. They confirmed him. And if they voted against him, they certainly didn't mount a filibuster to block a vote from even coming up. This is the Supreme Court, the highest court in the land. It's the one court where we would expect elected officials to rise above day-to-day politics. And this will be the opportunity for senators to do their job. Your job doesn't stop until you're voted out or until your term expires. I intend to do my job between now and January 20th of 2017, I expect them to do their job as well.
And they said, we will not rise above this. We will play partisan politics. And then they come up with something called the Biden rule. There is video, it's pretty easy to find on the YouTubes, I didn't pull it because I've got enough clips in this show, where he was arguing against a Supreme Court nominee. A Supreme Court nominee that, by the way, eventually did get a hearing. Now remember, what we're talking about right now is Republicans are saying we're not even gonna give the guy a hearing. And the one opinion, and by the way, they built a wiki page for what they call the Biden rule. The opinion that keeps coming up is that we can't do anything because it is this president's last year. But the president isn't having any of it. And he said, we are going to pick somebody. And so he's pressed. He's pressed by the press. And I suppose that's what they're supposed to do. And they said, so who are you thinking about picking? Are you going to pick a wild-eyed liberal? Or are you going to make sure that you don't shift the ideology of the court? A court which, by the way, is supposed to adhere strictly to the Constitution and not have an ideology.
Following up on that, should we interpret your comments just now that you are likely to choose a moderate nominee? Would you consider...
No.
Okay.
I don't know where you found that. You shouldn't assume anything about the qualifications of the nominee other than they're going to be well-qualified.
All right.
Okay.
Following up, yes. Would you consider a recess appointment if your nominee is not granted a hearing?
I think that we have more than enough time to go through regular order, regular processes. I intend to nominate somebody, to present them to the American people, to present them to the Senate. I expect them to hold hearings. I expect there to be a vote.
And we do have more than enough time. That is, unless You are a black Democratic left-handed president in the last year. Because remember, they want to let the people speak, and you're in the last year of your term. They say, we have never, ever done this before. We've never, ever elected any. We've never, ever brought anybody up in the last year of a president's term. Lie, 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 lie. But the Constitution this, the Constitution that, the Constitution. Easy, easy. If you guys love the Constitution so much, it is now time for you to do your job.
The Constitution of the United States is clear. Article 2, Section 2 says the president, quote, shall nominate and by and with the advice and consent of the Senate, shall appoint judges to the Supreme Court, unquote. It doesn't say the president can't appoint in the final year of his term of office. In fact, a third of all U.S. presidents have appointed a Supreme Court justice in an election year. Yet many Republicans argue that no appointment can be made in an election year. And the Constitution doesn't give the Senate leader the right to delay and obstruct the rest of the Senate from voting on a president's nominee. And yet this is what the current Republican leadership argues. In refusing to vote or even hold a hearing on the president's nominee to the Supreme Court, the GOP is abdicating its constitutional responsibility. It's not doing its job.
So I've noticed more and more that when I watch or listen to Fox News, there's two sides of Fox News. And one of those really interesting sides it has to do with Shepard Smith. Shepard Smith gives pretty good interviews. Now, he works at Fox News, but he is pretty good about some of this stuff and is pretty honest. So over on Fox, you got two types of hosts. You've got the one like Neil Cavuto. I'll play some of his clips here in a minute that are saying, hey, you need to do this right now. I don't understand why you're not doing this. And then Shep Smith. But then you've got the other people on Fox that are bringing on right-wing politicians and helping them spread their talking points. And Mitch McConnell, it doesn't matter how many interviews that he does. Every time he gets in front of a mic, not doing it the final year, not doing it in the final year, not doing it the final year, not doing it the final year.
When you look at the Constitution, when you look at historical precedent, is there any legitimate basis for saying we don't do this in the final year of a presidential term? We traditionally don't do this. As a matter of fact, we hold off on these types of appointments and these types of hearings. Is there any basis for that in fact?
Well, of course not. That's not in our U.S. Constitution. And that was the point President Obama was making from Rancho Mirage yesterday, that he's doing his job. He has a vacancy to fill. He plans to nominate somebody, and he wants the Senate to act responsibly.
One of the stories that gets pointed out that the Republicans try to use for justification for why they won't hear from the president's nominee, no matter who he is Judge Robert Bork. This from Eric Bullard over at Media Matters. Judge Robert Bork was nominated for the Supreme Court by President Ronald Reagan, only to have the U.S. Senate vote down the confirmation. Quote, Democrats have been blowing up the appointment process piecemeal since they turned Judge Robert Bork's last name into a verb back in 1987, wrote Jonah Goldberg from the Los Angeles Times in a column about the fight over replacing Scalia. Quote, look at what the Democrats have done in poisoning the well, particularly on judicial nominations stretching back to 1987 when the character assassination against Robert Bork, this is by Guy Benson over at Fox News, character assassination against Robert Bork, da-da-da-da-da, and it goes on. And being Borked became a verb in conservative circles. The Borg battle revolved around a specific jurist. The Scalia battle revolves around the idea that the entire nominating process should be shelved for at least a year. In 2016, it's the Republican Senate that's threatening to bork whoever President Obama wants, and they have every right to do so, wrote Tim Stanley at the Telegraph. Democrats are upset Republicans won't acknowledge Obama's right to nominate anybody to the Supreme Court, and that is truly a radical notion. And clearly, the Republicans, even today, love Robert Bork. By the way, Robert Bork got a vote and was voted down. Democrats never told Reagan, don't send Congress a Supreme Court nominee because he or she won't be considered. Obviously, Democrats did consider the Bork nomination, and he did get an up or down vote. So what made Bork so great to Republicans that they're upset that he didn't get on the Supreme Court? Well, the thing that made Bork great is the same thing that made Scalia great to them. He was a hardcore racist. According to an NPR report, he wrote an article opposing the 1964 civil rights law that required hotels and restaurants and other businesses to serve people of all races. He also opposed a 1965 Supreme Court decision that struck down a state law banning contraceptives for married couples. There's no right to privacy in the Constitution, Bork said. And he opposed Supreme Court decisions on gender equality, too. They sent him to the Senate. We heard from him. And he was turned down. So, President Obama says, okay, I'm going to send somebody over to the Supreme Court. I've made my decision. I'm going to send somebody over to the Supreme Court. And he decides, and this is where we as progressives got a little disappointed, because we really wanted somebody that was, you know, more like Kagan, or, you know, more like Sotomayor, or more like Ruth Bader Ginsburg. But what we got was this nice middle-of-the-road gentleman named Merrick Garland. Not to the hard right, not to the hard left, truly a guy just right smack dab in the middle. And he says, okay, who do you guys want me to send over there? They said, don't send anybody. But more than a few of them said, we like Merrick Garland.
I believe Mr. Garland is a fine nominee. I know him personally. I know of his integrity. I know of his legal ability. I know of his honesty. I know of his acumen. And he belongs on the court.
Merrick Garland is on the D.C. Circuit Court, which is also a lifetime opinion. So if he is not confirmed to go to the Supreme Court, then he still has that lifetime job, which I believe is one of the reasons that the president felt okay to go ahead and nominate him to this seat. Because even if he doesn't make it, he still has another job. And Merrick Garland went in front of the camera when he was introduced by President Obama and cried. He was very, very happy about this, very proud of this day. Talked about how much he loved his family and what led up to this day, and the Republicans still said absolutely hell no. So that clip I just played, that was Orrin Hatch. That was Orrin Hatch back in 1997 when Merrick Garland was being nominated for the D.C. Circuit Court. So he went on with Neil Cavuto, because Orrin Hatch, Republican from Utah, is on the Judiciary Committee, and that's who you want to hear from. And Cavuto says, okay, so what's the problem?
Orrin Hatch with him right now. Senator, what changed?
Nothing except 19 years, and the fact was that was a nomination to the Circuit Court of Appeals, which is a very high court in our country, but it's not the Supreme Court. The difference between that and the Supreme Court is the Supreme Court really can make the law. It can interpret the Constitution.
Boom, and there it is. What changed? Well, 19 years. And the fact that it's this president. And he admits right there the fact that that the Supreme Court can make law. Should it be that way? No, but unfortunately, it is.
What if it is Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders who become president? Do you think Republicans will rue the day that they missed a chance at a moderate pick for the court? Because either one of those folks would probably pick someone a little bit more to the left.
Well, this is the most important issue in this presidential campaign, and it's a big reason why people should vote for the Republican nominee, whoever that may be, because the next president is going to probably have somewhere between 3 and 4 judicial picks on the Supreme Court, and they could turn the whole Constitution around in accordance with some of these activists. Liberal Democrat judges that just don't seem to worry too much about what the Constitution says.
He says, look, guys, he sent you somebody who was not to the far left. He sent you a person, all right? And he sent you somebody that most of you actually said that you like. And remember, they want to hold it up for the next election. Remember, if you really want to hold it up for the next election, it might be Bernie Sanders. It might be Hillary Clinton. And then you're going to be wishing that you had Merrick back. Cavuto goes on and tries to appeal to this guy a little bit and says, look, I understand you guys have your reasons, you're as childish as they may be, but honestly, this guy should get a hearing. Why don't you guys be the adults in the room? And as you heard Orrin Hatch say right there, this is why the election is so important. And he's right. Sure, the election is very important. But telling people that you're not going to do anything in the final year and you're going to put up a big fight about this, it's a bit childish. And if the last year doesn't matter, then perhaps the last year of everybody's terms shouldn't matter.
Why should Republicans play that game that is notoriously played out in election years and say, no, we're going to be different. We're going to, in this environment, weigh the president's choices, come up with budgets, come up with legislation, do the kind of stuff that cynics don't think we can. And if you don't like this nominee, vote him down.
Well, it isn't quite that simple. Joe Biden made it very clear when he talked a year and a half that before the election that you should not be putting people up during the presidential election.
Why?
There's good
Why?
Reason for that.
Why?
Because it's a toxic environment. It demeans the court. People then make the court into a politicized institution rather
than one.
It's
always politicized, Senator. It's always politicized. And by that, Matthew, you would just rule out the last year of any Congress, of any senator, of any president for getting stuff done. You could send a powerful signal by saying, you know what? We're going to hold hearings. We don't like the guy. We're going to vote him down. But we know the Democrats have played these games. We know we in the past have played these games. We're not going to play these games.
I think Cavuto is really trying to help him out. And he's going, look, just be the adult in the room. Give this guy a hearing. You can still vote him down. But at the very least, give this guy a hearing. And Orrin Hatch, well, realizing what he's up against, decides to complain once again, still political, too political, politics, still political.
I'm tired of the court being politicized. And this is politicizing the court during this
particular
year.
Well, no offense, Senator. I mean, you've played a part in politicizing it. Maybe that wasn't your goal.
I don't think so.
But both parties do this. And I think it would be interesting to see a guy like you who's widely respected, both sides of the aisle, say, you know what, I've had enough of this nonsense.
And then he gets his rear end handed to him by the folks over on Fox News. I have no idea how this particular thing is going to play out. I think there's a really good chance that Merrick is not going to get confirmed. And he was put up by the president to be that sacrificial lamb. We'll see what happens. But the solution here for us as people out here, as constituents, the folks out here in the audience, is to put pressure on our elected representatives. Put pressure on your senators, because that's where this hearing is going to happen. It's going to happen in the Senate. And everything is going to go back to the lower courts if we don't put somebody on the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is meant to be where the buck stops. And without it, we're just going to have cases bouncing around all the time. I get it. My president is in office. That's why I want that seat filled. I think I'd want it filled anytime. It's a very important court, and we need that seat filled.
If you're a Christian or a white man in the USA, it's open season on you.
We don't have a religious test for office. Excuse me. We should not have a religious test for office. What your faith is really shouldn't matter. But why does it? Right now, Ted Cruz is running as the evangelical. Donald Trump is running as the evangelical. That's not what we want to hear from you. We want to hear what your policy positions are. We want to hear how you feel about your fellow man. And we want to know that that's where your morality is going to come from. But yet, this idea of somebody who is not religious, and maybe even worse, somebody who might even be an atheist. There we go. That was kind of gaspy. What will we do if an atheist got us into office?
If you come to America, you understand that we are a Christian country, and therefore we observe Christian holidays. Don't expect us to make room for your holidays. We're expecting you to accommodate yourself to our standards, our traditions, and our holidays. We will expect you to adopt our Christian moral values no place, no room for Sharia law in the United States. We will expect you. You'll be welcome here. We'll open our arms to you. We'll open our hearts to you. We'll open our communities to you. But we will expect you to adopt our cultural and Christian moral standards. We will expect you to adopt our Christian heroes. And we will expect you to adopt our Christian history.
Everybody will assimilate. Everybody will be exactly the same. And if you do not, you are not welcome here. And this may sound a little nutty, but this kind of thing plays very, very well here. Now, by the way, we are not a Christian nation. You are allowed to be a Christian in America and practice as freely as you want to. You are allowed to be a Muslim or a Jew or whatever you want in America. And yes, that right is protected. It's called religious freedom, and you're allowed to have it. But you're not allowed to take your religion, by the way, which is only one of 400 or 500 religions. Take your one religion, say that this is the religion, and this is the religion that should govern America. We don't have religious tests, and that's not the way this kind of thing works. But it doesn't matter. Even out on the campaign trail, they keep pushing this idea.
Today's modern Democratic Party has become so radicalized in their devotion to mandatory gay marriage in all 50 states that there is no longer any room for religious liberty. There is no longer any room for defending what is the very first liberty protected in the First Amendment to the Bill of Rights of our Constitution. We need to remember who we are. America is a nation. We were founded by men and women fleeing religious persecution. And we came to seek out a new land where every man and woman could seek out and worship the Lord God Almighty with all of our hearts, minds, and souls.
We came to America to flee religious persecution, where they made us be another religion. And now that you're here, you're going to be another religion. Oh, and by the way, now that marriage equality is the law of the land, there will be mandatory gay marriage. You heard me, mandatory. I remember when the marriage equality law passed, I had to divorce my beautiful bride and run right out and marry a dude because it's mandatory. And victims. We're all victims. If we're Christians, we're all victims. The IRS is coming after us because we're Christians and they don't like the fact that we believe in... Oh, ugh.
But the one problem I have is that I'm always audited by the IRS, which I think is very unfair. I don't know, maybe because of religion, maybe because of something else, maybe because I'm doing this, although this is just recently.
What do you mean religion?
Well, maybe because of the fact that I'm a strong Christian and I feel strongly about it, and maybe there's a bias.
You think maybe you get audited for being a strong Christian?
You see what's happened. I mean, you have many religious groups that are complaining about that. They've been complaining about it for a long time.
Donald makes a lot of money. A lot of money. It is not unheard of for those guys to get audited a lot. But when he says this thing, I'm being audited because I'm a strong Christian. No. You're being audited because you make a lot of money, and some of your dealings may look a little shady. No. I'm being audited because I'm a strong Christian, because this kind of language plays very well in the Christian community. Not the whole, but in a very large swaths of it, because they really do believe that the world is out to get them because they're Christian. So Bernie Sanders is Jewish. He has family that survived the Holocaust. But Sanders, though a Jew, is a non-practicing Jew. So it's come up more than a few times, and even though it shouldn't, it does, because this is the state of our politics right now. It's come up. Senator Sanders, does religion play any role in your life?
It's a guiding principle in my life. Absolutely it is. You know, everybody practices religion in a different way. To me, I would not be here tonight. I would not be running for president of the United States if I did not have very strong religious and spiritual feelings. I believe that as a human being, the pain that one person feels, if we have children who are hungry in America, if we have elderly people who can't afford their prescription drugs, you know what? That impacts you, that impacts me. And I worry very much about a society where some people spiritually say, it doesn't matter to me, I got it, I don't care about other people. So my spirituality is that we are all in this together, and that when children go hungry, when veterans sleep out on the street, it impacts me. That's my very strong spiritual feeling.
I am not a religious person. I am an atheist, and I've made no. I'm not secretive at all about that. I'm not hiding it. I'm not wearing it on my. I'm not getting atheist tattoos and running around preaching about atheist things. But I am very quietly, if you inquire, I am an atheist. But the things that motivate Senator Sanders, the things that drive him, those are the same things that drive me. I am concerned about my fellow man. I want to make sure that we have affordable housing. I want to make sure that everybody has shoes on their feet. I want to make sure that everybody has a place to live. I want to make sure that everybody has food in their stomachs. And I don't care if I ever get rich. And my reasoning, first of all, if I have it, I believe other folks should too. Now, I know that makes me a terrible person, but I also believe that if you aren't sick, you're not going to get me sick. If you aren't hungry, then you're going to do better. Society will do better as a whole. If you've got food in your stomach, you've got a place to live, you've got shoes in your feet, I believe society would do better as a whole. But there are more than a few folks that say, no, to hell with you, I got mine, and who cares about yours? Somebody over on The View, of all shows, The View realized that Bernie Sanders, not just a non-practicing Jew, might even be an atheist.
He was asked about his religious faith, and he said that he does believe in God, but admits he's not, like, actively involved with organized religion, which I assume means he doesn't go to temple or church.
Temple.
Okay.
He's Jewish.
So, no, I understand that, but I'm saying he does not go in the building. Right. He doesn't go every Sunday, mm-hmm. every Saturday. He doesn't do that.
Most Reformed Jews do go at least to Yom Kippur.
That's the one holiday we do.
He does not do that. Yeah. So that's the question. Do you think this will turn voters off? Will folks be able to accept that, like most of us, he doesn't go into the building to do it?
Mm. Is he an atheist? Does it matter? I'll tell you what, George W. Bush was a Christian, and he launched a war on an unarmed nation, got a lot of people killed, and made a lot of money for his rich friends off of it. Ted Cruz is a Christian, and is talking about bombing the hell out of everybody and everything, and killing lots and lots of people. Bernie Sanders, a non-practicing Jew, who might be an atheist, might not, it doesn't matter, and I'll tell you why. Because it seems to me that whether he is a practicing or non-practicing Jew or an atheist, his moral compass is way better than what's going on the Republican side.
A recent poll did say that more than half of Americans, 51%, would say they would be less likely to vote for a president candidate who does not believe in God.
So an atheist.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So it's important to more than half the country.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, what happened to sort of the separation of church and state?
I'm uncomfortable.
I mean, I'm Catholic, but I don't need my president to believe in the God that I believe in or in the religion that I believe in, because I don't want his politics to be swayed by or to be favored by his religious beliefs.
I would like to think that your policy would be swayed by your religious beliefs. But whenever we pick a deeply religious conservative, especially, to be in any office, they really seem to run to the opposite of where we know Jesus Christ's values to be. We talked about this a couple of shows ago. Humility, charity, kindness, the things that a Christian, a deeply religious person is supposed to have are exactly the opposite of the values that are running on the conservative side. So this is pretty well settled now, right? We know where Bernie Sanders is at, right? It doesn't matter. But it keeps coming up. Every time there's another debate, every time there's another town hall, without fail, his faith comes up again.
Senator Sanders, do you believe that God is relevant? Why or why not?
The answer is yes. And I think when we talk about God, whether it is Christianity or Judaism or Islam or Buddhism, what we are talking about is what all religions hold dear. And that is to do unto others as you would like them to do unto you.
And that's my religion. That's where I come in. That's where I come down on this particular subject. I believe that we all deserve a chance. I believe that we should all get to feel safe. And I believe that a necessitous man. Now, the argument is made that if we just get rid of the government, if we get rid of all these programs that help people, get rid of food stamps, get rid of Medicare, get rid of the ACA, leaving everybody on their own will make everybody more free. But a necessitous man is not free. If, and I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again, if you're broke, if you're hungry, you don't have a place to live, you are not free.
Every great religion in the world, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, essentially comes down to do unto others as you would like them to do unto you. And what I have believed in my whole life, I believed it when I was a 22-year-old kid getting arrested in Chicago fighting segregation. I believed it in my whole life, that we are in this together, not just not words. The truth is, at some level, when you hurt, when your children hurt, I hurt. I hurt. And when my kids hurt, you hurt. And it's very easy to turn our backs on kids who are hungry or veterans who are sleeping out on the street, and we can develop a psyche, a psychology, which says, I don't have to worry about them. All I'm going to worry about myself. I need to make another $5 billion. But I believe that what human nature is about is that everybody in this room impacts everybody else in all kinds of ways that we can't even understand. It's beyond intellect.
There was once a place where we in society, a time in society, where we really, really did need more, where we needed an explanation for things that we could not explain. And it made sense to have religion, contribute it to gods, or if you are so egalitarian, to goddesses. But now we don't necessarily need it anymore. We've got explanations for those things. But in your defense, if you are religious, I think it's fine to have a religion. But it should not dictate our laws. Maybe I am lost. Maybe I'm wrong. And maybe I just need to be born again. Huh. Born again. You know what I like about the idea of being born again is, well, nothing. I like exactly who I am right now. I like exactly where I'm at right now. I've done pretty freaking well in my life. I don't think I need to be born again. But this idea is constantly being pushed on a lot of folks. You need to be born again. Why does religion want us so badly to be born again?
The church doesn't like for people to grow up because you can't control grown-ups. That's why we talk about being born again. When you're born again, you're still a child. The people don't need to be born again. They need to grow up. They need to accept their responsibility for themselves and the world.
I broadcast out of Portland, Oregon. And Glenn Beck once called this the worst city in America. Now, why did he say that? Well, because we are the least religious city in America. But at the same time, we are also a city that identifies as spiritual. Now, what is spirituality? Spirituality, it's whatever... whatever it is to you. My wife is not religious either, but she says that she is spiritual. I make claim of none of it, but my moral compass is to look out for my fellow man. If I have a ton of money, if I've got a gigantic house, if I've got a bunch of cars, if I've got a ton of jewelry, that means nothing to me while I'm alive, and it's going to mean nothing to me when I pass. It's just a lot of resources dumped into one small area. I didn't help anybody. But if I've got food to eat, a place to live, shoes on my feet, and so does my neighbor, and the next guy over, and the next guy over, I'm happy where I'm at in my middle class life, in my moderately sized house, in my small passenger car. I'm happy where I'm at. And I would just like to see other people do the same as well. That is my moral compass. That is my, I suppose, spirituality.
My spirituality is that we are all in this together.
And you can have your religion, and that's fine. Nobody's trying to take that away from you. You can have it. But it does not get to dictate our laws. Because as the great Bill O'Reilly would say,
we're a secular society, and that's the way the Founding Fathers wanted it to be.
We're a secular society, and that's the way the Founding Fathers say, hey, sorry, I didn't mean to call him great. With respect to religion, it shouldn't matter. We shouldn't have a religious test. What we should be judging people on is what guides you. What is your moral compass? What do you think society should do for its people? What do you think the job of a government is? What do you think the job of the church is? Is it important to make sure that people at the very, very top are getting tax cuts if the people at the bottom are starving to death and dying from preventable illnesses. Something to think about. What drives you? And with that, we don't have a religious test for office, and we shouldn't adopt one now. And when you go out and pull the lever for a particular candidate, you know where I'm at. And if you don't know, I'll be happy to tell you. But when you go out and pull the lever for a particular candidate, ask, what are their values? Don't ask what their religion is. Ask, what are their values? Do their values mirror your values? And let that guide you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here with us on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Although we are also still over at kiwistation.com. You can definitely find all of our archives over there. As we are still building the Podbean site, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TFYCPO. You can listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app or the Kiwi Station app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store or on Podbean. Just search for The Fire You Can Put Out. There you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, hate mail, or just a general statement or inquiry, you can email us at tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail. You like that? Rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin M for producing. Thank you to Kiwi. And hey, you. Yeah, I'm talking to you. Thank you for listening. This is Melvin signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.